Blog Talk Radio. This is Jennifer Perry, and welcome to Madam Perry Salon. I believe I have my guest on the line. Mr. Smith, are you with me? Hello, can you hear me? Okay. All right, Don, can you hear me? Yikes.
Hello.
Hey. Now can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Yeah.
All right, good. Hey. Okay, yeah. Had a little trouble with the studio this evening, so I'm sorry. I know you were there waiting on me. But this is Madam Perry Salon, and I'm glad to welcome you here.
And I'm glad to
be here. Just to start off, I don't know if you recall this, Don, but I met you in Biloxi at a Barnes & Noble.
Yes.
You do?
I remember. Sort of remember.
Okay. For the listener, I had a client, author, Carrie Dunn, and he had a TV show the day before and a book signing event in the Barnes & Noble Biloxi. And I was wanting some good pictures for the website. So I saw you, and I thought, okay, this guy looks like somebody. He's got a good look. So I brought you over there, and then we talked, and you told me you were a musician.
Yeah. I mean, that was good.
So then I got your card, and then, of course, later you probably thought that, you know, I was actually going to come burglarize your house or something, or see if I could check your credit and do some kind of blackmail. But that wasn't true. I'm not that kind of radio host yet.
Okay.
So this is going to be just kind of a rolling conversation, but I also know that people can call in, and anyone who's listening, because we've been putting this social media, anyone who's listening who wants to ask a question or talk with Don Smith or me can call in. The number is 646-716-9922. And if you're listening to this live right now on Tuesday, April 28th, if you would just click the follow button there on the page so that we will be able to prove we have followers. And that helps you get sponsors and cool stuff like that and more cool guests like you. So, to get into this, produced or released a new CD that was recorded in Nashville?
Yes. Well, it's almost a year ago now. And it has been released out on the radio and all over the world, actually. It's been fun. I've gotten reports back from different countries around the world. I mean, it's not like a Taylor Swift kind of a report, but, you know, a few people out there are listening. It's kind of fun. Like, and in strange stations that are kind of interesting, was like in Tasmania.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know that was an actual place. I had to look it up and say, oh, yeah, there's a Tasmanian. They have a radio station there, and they play country music. I guess it's a friend of the producer or something. I don't know where they get this stuff from. And then in Scotland and England and Australia and in the United States, of course, and Canada, a lot of random places. That was just the radio part, which is really interesting because, you know, it's just fun to do that.
Well, let me ask you this now. So you said it's been about a year ago since you released, and the name of the CD is Delta Wind?
Yes.
Am I right? Okay. And, no, go ahead.
It's also on Spotify and iTunes and all those kind of things too. All the digital media.
Okay.
Pretty much everywhere. Radio airplay.
So you put this out about a year ago, and then you're being played in several other countries. How does that start to grow, and how does that feel?
Well, it's fun. You know, it hasn't made any money, but, you know, it's kind of like a musician's dream to do those kind of things, to know that your music's being heard, like, all over the place by different people and appreciated by, I even had some local airplay on the country station in the South Mississippi market, which was exciting too, because then I could just hear it being played live. The other stations, you know, obviously I can't be riding down the road and hear their station in Tasmania, so
Well, yeah, but these days at least you can, you got a better chance. Now, the song that I opened with, Everybody's Got to Swing, that was from my CD of the same name, and I think I put that out back in 2000, and we did find that there was somebody playing it in the Philippines and then somebody in Buffalo.
Oh.
So, yeah, but that back then, you know, you couldn't have found it on the Internet very easily like we do now. And but still it was a cool feeling. You know, I couldn't prove it to anybody I knew, and I couldn't hear it, but, you know, we knew it.
Yeah.
So we would get these emails from the folks there. And so that's nice. So what? So how did that grow? I mean, did you have yourself or a publicist or a manager send things out, or do other musicians or your producer share?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. It was a pretty interesting story. Like, Doc Holliday was the producer, and his people contacted me through Reverb Nation, which is a internet site where musicians are on. There's about a million musicians on there. And they said, I thought it was a scam at first. He offered me like a deal to come to Nashville and record the mega studio, and if I would put up like some of the money, he would put up like some of the money, and he guaranteed it would be played on the air, and that he would have a list of studio musicians that were the best in the business record it, and at one of the top studios, at Quadraphonic Studio, were Taylor Swift and Neil Young, Jimmy Buffett, on and on and on. People recorded theirs. So that's, it's kind of like, I thought it was like some kind of like scam just to get your money. I mean, so I did some checking around. I asked some people that I knew in the business and called a cousin of mine that is an entertainment lawyer up in Nashville and said, people do that kind of thing. And like, he wanted like 50% of publishing rights too. So, that's kind of how the guys make the business. The music industry just changed, and everybody's just scrambling to figure out how to survive in the business. So that was the model that they came up with, which is pretty cool because it gives people like me that wouldn't have a chance to book a major studio and like real good players and everything. And he knows all these people and they work for him. And he gets a chance to make some money on the back end, later down. He gets picked up by a movie or anything like that. So, and he does that a lot. So, it's kind of like that's the stock market for a producer.
Yeah. And I can see because, Reverb, there's a lot of people on Reverb Nation. So
yeah.
I can imagine, first you would think, okay, this is my, this is my cousin or, brother-in-law or somebody playing a trick on me or.
Yeah.
Just trying to wind me up, trying to yank my chain a little bit. But, Doc Holliday, he's pretty legit. He's got, and that gives the whole thing, figure once you knew it was really him,
right.
Put a lot of cred into this. Tell us who else he produces.
Well, we started out, the biggest thing we started with, he's been in the business a lot. He's an older guy now. And he produced the Herman's Hermits when they first came over. And he's worked with just like a whole lot of named people, mostly in the country business, but he's also worked with Bob Marley's in that genre and lots of other genres. And I'm trying to think, the Raging Cajun guy, all over the place. And he's worked with Willie Nelson and some of the big names too, Johnny Cash, and just like on and on. And over the years, he's made contacts with all the really top players. And the players that were on there were like was phenomenal because they're all in the same room. And they were like, you know, heroes pretty much of mine. And getting a chance to be in the same room with these guys was just, that was worth the money and the trip in itself, you know.
Oh, I can imagine. So tell me who some of the people were, because I've got a lot of, you know, musician pals that spend some time up there that listen to the show. Yeah. So who were you with?
Well, Craig Cramp, the drummer on drums, he wrote "Oh Sherry" for Journey, and he played on every Alabama hit that ever was, all the great Alabama hits. He was the drummer for that. Then Dave Rowe played bass. He's Johnny Cash's main bass player, and the three guys that played with him, like, you know, their famous Johnny Cash's band. I forgot the name of them now. And, Pat Seaver plays steel guitar. He plays with everybody. He's just phenomenal. He plays at the Opry. He left my session and went to the Opry and played with, he's always playing with somebody big. He never knows what star he's going to play.
You got to warm up that night then.
Yeah, Dale Hare.
Yeah.
He wrote the music for the Simpsons. He plays with a lot of people too. He's a arranger, and besides being a great guitar player. And then Bobby Bradley was the engineer. His uncle was the founder of Music Row, so he's been around. He actually engineered some of Elvis's stuff, I think, like one of his Christmas albums. And they had Gary Talent on keyboard. He's played with Bruce Springsteen. He's actually in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And some of these guys, other guys are in the Hall of Fame too. Dave's in the Hall of Fame. I forget these guys, but Mark Greenwood, he was Garth Brooks' band manager, and Deb Thomas was background vocals. She did my background vocals for everybody. It was cool just being there. Actually, one of the greatest parts of the experience was somebody that was there that wasn't even working on my record or anything, but it was Ray Price came in. He was working on his last studio. Yeah,
really?
The legend. I was sitting in there waiting to go in. You know, they were still working in there. And then a guy walks in with a cardboard box with a bunch of music in it and it had Ray Price written on it and like marker. He said, "Wow, that's cool." You know, and then Ray walked in and said, "Hey, how you doing?" And I didn't know what, I couldn't say anything. So he walked in at time. But he was, you know, he had cancer at the time, and he would, when he felt good enough, strong enough, he'd pull his tour bus up there close to the studio and he would come in and record. And he was working on his last stuff before he passed away up there, and I got to be there the same day. He was working in the next room. So it was pretty amazing.
I can't imagine. I can imagine that there would be, you know, you would have more material after that just from the experience of being there with all these people. From the story and situations as well as the inspiration.
Yeah, it's just surreal, like, to be with people there in, you know, the Hall of Fame already. Yeah. Legends, like ghosts walking around among giants, you know. So that was definitely inspiring, and, you know.
So how were they to work with, Don?
Oh, they were great. They were easy to work with, like, you know, kidding around. Like, they were very efficient. I mean, we talked. They listened to my tape, which is just guitar and vocals, and they, like, talked about it for, like, 5 minutes and made notes. Everything Dale had already made up, you know, the charts, and that's all it took. They were ready to go. They went in there and just did it, and, like, it was perfect. They didn't have to, you know, they didn't mess around. You know, they knew exactly what they wanted to do. You know, I guess they thought about it ahead of time, too, but. And I got to sing like a pilot track in front of him, which was very, very nervous, intense.
Oh.
I could see through the little window there, like, you know, they're actually in there. I had to sing in front of them, but it went well. They thought I was decent, so they thought I was good. They made some good comments, you know. So
that you were there. I mean, you had been called to come there. And offered the deal, and the fact that you were called up there, you know, you would think they already, you know, knew you were worthy of respect, but still, I would imagine when it's you, you're the one there. There's still that little bit of, am I really here? Mm-hmm. You know, is this really happening?
Yeah, because you've always built this up, and the legends in your mind. You know, it's Nashville mm-hmm. and the studios and everything. The studio world seems to be like a million miles away, like Mount Olympus.
Mm-hmm.
In Mississippi, then you're actually there. It's like, wow, this is like actually real.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me of, I think, what is it? Is it Inner Vision, Stevie Wonder, where he gets off and he says, New York, just like I pictured it. You know, it'll be something like that. Well, you know, I have two tracks here from Delta Wind. I've got Delta Wind and the title song and Ghost of Elvis. Well, I'd like to play one. Which one should we listen to first?
It doesn't really matter. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of up to you.
All right, let's go with Ghost of Elvis.
Okay.
And again, this is Jennifer Perry, Madame Perry Salon, and I have musician and artist Don Smith about to play Ghost of Elvis from his newest CD, Delta Wind. Could you get my...
Hey.
Thought I saw the ghost of Elvis down at the tulip room, back on the coast of Mississippi, back when the dream was still new. Same old bar, same old room, same old sleepy night in June. Same old sad thoughts, same old tune. Same old blue moon. In the corner, hang out for a beer or two, talk to Big E about the things he dreamed of, back before the dream was through. Same old bar, same old room, same old sleepy night in June. Same old sad thoughts, same old tune. Same old blue.
That's beautiful. It's got a very haunting feel, and especially even to the end.
Yeah, that's a real thing too. That's a real place, the Tulip Room, and I played there a bunch of times. And it's kind of like a cellar. And Elvis did hang out there. He's sit back there. He had a girlfriend in South Mississippi. He'd come down a lot, and then he would sneak off into this bar, which is close to where he had a hotel room. Sleeping out there, and they tell you where the corner is. Sometimes you can kind of just like feel him there. Seems like he's there.
And where is this?
It's the Julep Room. It's in Ocean Springs.
Okay.
It's like a catfish restaurant, which is really an old house. Old southern house from the 1850s or something like that. And then underneath it used to be the wine cellar or a cellar that turned it into a bar. It's really low ceiling. And it's kind of cool in there, but it's a nice little place for music venue.
Okay, see, I've got to get all this information in, Don, for people to, you know, they listen, they get that feeling, and they want to go recreate it for themselves while they're having catfish.
Yeah.
People got to know this stuff. You put this on your website?
I don't know if I put that on there or not.
I haven't seen it on there, and I've been going over it pretty well. So. All right. So now, when Doc Holliday first heard your music, were these songs already on your Reverb Nation page, or did he say what songs in particular really attracted him to your work?
Yeah, he picked out a few that he liked, and then we decided which one. I mean, he offered me a deal on more, but I didn't have the bucks to do it, so I.
Mm-hmm.
Post it timidly, one song at a time, you know. I still have like an open invitation to do more, but it involves expense on my part too, like to go to Nashville mm-hmm. and stay in a hotel and, you know, and pay part of it, you know. It's, even though it's cheaper than it would be, it's still, for me, a lot of money, and it doesn't really make a lot of money. It was great for the experience, so it was worth every dime of it at first, but
mm-hmm.
sure if that's the way I want to go from now on. Unless they're really going to just take over and like a record label and then just, you know, fund everything where they front you the money and all that kind of stuff. But I haven't got
that
kind of deal.
Would be nice, like the way they used to do it, I guess, more often than now.
Yeah, when the business was just booming, they would throw money around, you know. They would give you a lot of money up front, you know.
Yeah, so for people listening who aren't really aware of the shift in the music business, do you think there are advantages to this way as well, to the new?
Yeah, well, now there's platforms where you don't really need the labels. You know, it's mm-hmm. nice to go like big, like Tim McGraw kind of big, but,
mm-hmm.
but actually you probably can, from what I've read and understand, it's you can come out better financially by doing it yourself. If you're willing to do all the work. Because, you know, by the time people take this percentage here and this percentage there, and then, like, it doesn't really amount to much money that really comes back.
Right.
But if you're keeping it all, you know, at least, you know, you have control over the amount of income you're getting. And you can, you know, if you go out and play, you get to keep all the money. So, you know, that's really where the money is now. Because you only get like a hundredth of a cent, maybe it's that, every time it plays on Spotify or the radio. People don't realize that hardly anything.
Yeah, that's the truth. That's a sad truth. But, I guess you build a platform just like I'm an entertainment publicist, and I always have to tell my clients that mostly the authors, and musicians too, they have to build their platform, which a lot of that is just having a social presence. And being heard, being seen, being recognizable to the public, because the people think, you know, if they don't know you, I haven't heard of them, so who are they?
Right.
And plus people are so inundated with images and sounds and buy this and get that it takes a lot more to be heard and remembered today. I'm not saying people are stupid, but I'm saying people have so many images and names and sounds and everything's just at like a constant assault wherever you go. So you have to have
important.
A presence.
Like you did, I mean, it's kind of gone back to the way it was a long time ago. People built a relationship one fan at a time. You could especially in country music, like other genres, it was just like overnight stuff. But these guys, like, it seems like they're overnight, but they were just out playing honky tonks and like one fan here, one fan there. Like pretty soon you have like a thousand people. Those are enough to keep you, buy you gas and keep you going. And then you just kind of built on that, you know. It was people like Ray Price, you know. It was just, you know, gradually more and more and more. And those people stuck with him his entire career. Even when mainstream wasn't playing Ray Price music anymore, his fans were still playing his stuff and still buying his CDs. It kept him, you know, surviving, kept him working in business.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting thing, too, I think, with the country music, because I know that I remember I've never been to, you know, the fanfare, the big country music festival every year, fanfare. And although I've been invited to join people there, I've never been. But what I've always heard from country music journalists, as well as some of the artists, is they say that, you know, country music fans tend to be far less fickle or, you know, ephemeral than fans of other music. You know, they say when they go to fanfare, it doesn't matter if there's somebody there that hasn't had a hit, hasn't had a CD or anything, you know, in 10 years, they've still got fans lining up. So the loyalty is far more consistent there.
Yeah, I think they latch on to the people more than even just as much as the music. And sometimes, even if it's not as good sometimes, at least they're like, it's like your brother or your sister, you know. You're like, you're still like supporting them, like, that's good, I'm still with you, you know. I still want to hear the message because it's, you know, it's real.
Yeah,
but like,
yeah.
You know, you don't have that same kind of connection to electronic dance music writer. I like all kinds of music, but, you know, it just seems like, you know, they played in the club and you didn't really get to talk to them or anything. So, like, I'm not loyal to them. Why? I don't even know them. They're not, I don't have any personal connection to them.
But if I did
meet them and hang out with them, I'd want to keep on buying their stuff, no matter if sometimes it was good, sometimes not, you know.
Oh yeah, because you feel that personal connection. That's so valuable, and I think even more now. You know, it matters to people. It gives a little extra spark to what you're doing and what they feel about the work. So when you were growing up, did you always listen to country music or always play it, or what did you listen to? What'd you write?
Well, I listened to everything, and I thought I wasn't country really, you know, until I got up to Nashville and went to the Hall of Fame and start walking around and looking and said, dadgum, that's the people that I grew up listening to, like Porter Wagoner and Dolly Parton and all those people that I just kind of put out of my mind. But then I remembered, like, the first concert I ever went to was Glen Campbell. You know, and I was just blown away, even though I spent a lot of time listening to rock and every other kind of thing. And kind of just like, because country wasn't cool for a while. Then it just kind of like dawned on me that I was like raised on country music. So it's kind of in there.
And
it was on TV, like every other show was like a hee haw or something like that, you know?
I think because I know when I was growing up, my dad was more into country. My mother was definitely a rock and roller. And so, you know, each one of them wanted to go see live, especially my mother loved to go see live music. And sometimes you see the blending of styles, or the blending of music. Sometimes it was just such a cool energy to it. I want to go ahead and play. Let me say, too, if you're just listening, I am Jennifer Perry, Madame Perry Salon, which the name of it comes from, it's an extension of a blog I've had. And my guest is musician, artist, and we're going to talk later. He's also a football coach. I don't know how you have time, but I guess that's how you stay in shape. Don Smith from, how do I say it, Pascagoula?
Yeah, that's good. That's pretty good. Everybody
Pascagoula?
It.
No,
right
it's
on.
Not.
Pascagoula.
Mississippi. And so if you want to talk to Don, have a question for him, the number is 646-716-9922. He's pretty easy to talk to, so don't be shy. And I'd like to go ahead and play Delta Wind from the CD Delta Wind. Okay.
Heather hair on my shoulder, freckle face makes me bolder. Tastes sweet like sugar cane. Drove on down to Rosedale, stood on the levee trail. Two chunks of coal for a memory. I made a promise there for God and the heavy air. I turned that coal to a diamond someday. Little did I know I'd still be holding on. Nothing but a memory. She was wild, high as a delta wind. I never felt that way again. Didn't know in my youthful bliss what would become of this, this thing I thought was love. Little did I know you can still fall if you don't let go. Tried to build a castle on a kiss. I was just a coast boy, unarmed in the way of this. Blue-eyed Southern Belle, how could a tomboy be so coy? Lost my soul in the folds of your hand. She was wild as a delta wind. I never felt that way.
By the way, I have a message here from one of my favorite listeners, David Hurley, who is the he's an author and poet. He's the publisher of Subtlety Magazine, and he just sent a message on Facebook that says, listening and wonderful song. He sent that after he heard Ghost of Elvis. So.
Oh, that's cool. Beautiful.
Oh, yes. Okay. He's got a question for us, too. David Hurley.
All right.
And it says, yeah, he always messages the questions to me. He says, question to you, Don. Is that you? Oh, I was going to ask this, too. Is that you playing the heartbreakingly lovely pedal steel guitar? And do you like guitarists and solo artists who share some artistic genes with country but aren't really in the genre? Maybe Leo Kottke or David Gilmour. Are you into blues, and do you ever play them? And I can back up on those questions. I know there's a lot in a row.
Yeah, I'll work it back if I can remember everything. But I definitely,
okay. The first one about the steel guitar.
Steel guitar, oh. Yeah. I mean, that's one of those things. I love steel guitar because you just add it to it and it just adds emotion. It's kind of like like strings. It's kind of like gravy. You can pour it on anything, and it's well, one thing, it's steel guitar countryfies a song up for one thing, but it just, it's like pulls your heartstrings. That's what Pat was saying, that he actually started to cry when he was recording this song on the Delta Wind thing, because it's kind of a sad song.
And so our yeah, because he David calls it heartbreakingly lovely pedal steel, and
yeah.
And that was played by Pat
Seaver. And
Pat Seaver.
He was like, it was a phenomenal performance. You know, it was, you know, he's gifted, you know. It's real. When he does it, he's an artist. He puts his heart and soul into it. Like you said, he was like crying himself while he was doing it.
Oh, now that's a testimony, Dom.
Yeah.
Right there, I think. And, says that your voice is heartbreakingly lovely, too.
Thanks.
It is. I agree. And the other question he said was, do you like guitarists or solo artists who share some artistic genres with country but aren't really in the genre, maybe Leo Kottke or David Gilmour? Are you into blues, and do you ever play the blues?
Oh, I definitely play blues. I did blues a lot. Like when I went to Ole Miss, I actually would sneak away and go to the Delta and try to find people that I could play with, because I wanted like the authentic experience. And I've had some really authentic experiences. I would bring my guitar, and that's when I was really learning how to play. So first I started learning how to play guitar. It's blues type guitar. I would like stay up all night and go in the stairwell, not disturb people, and try to play and go out in the woods and practice till my fingers bled and all that kind of stuff. But I really did that. But I went to like little juke joints on Highway 61 and would just play. Which is kind of ridiculous now I think about it. White kid, college kid, you know, pretending to be a blues guy. But the people were really cool about it. They would come in and, like, you know, started drinking a split beer and dancing. It was like an experience, you know. I'm glad I had it, you know. But I realized I wasn't a black guy from Delta that worked on the farm. But I was like, even though I love the music, and it's part of Mississippi, and I'm part of Mississippi, it's just like, it's not as authentic as it really needs to be for me. So that's why I kind of switched back and tried to find myself.
But, you know, it's my experience that musicians tend to, and it doesn't, and I've been probably not around as many as you, you know, but my husband's a musician, and then the years that I played out, being around people of musicians of all genres and all ages and all walks of life, there's a common bond. And if there's an honesty and a legitimacy to what you play and how you play it, I think it sort of tends to cut through whatever might seem to be a difference.
Yeah. If you approach people, like you said, like when it's real, it was real to me. I was genuinely was feeling it, you know. So, like, they didn't think I was trying to make fun of them, or, you know, it was respectful, like, you know, and it worked. Even I was like, should have been in the wrong place, you know. I was like in the Delta, like in the middle of like nowhere, like, you know, where rich white kids. I wasn't rich, but, you know, just like white kids don't hang out. You know, I didn't think about that. I just wanted to go and be part of that. You know, I had no thought about it whatsoever, and they didn't think about it either. So it was just like, I don't know, purity goes a long way.
Yeah, I believe that. I think musicians, you feel it from the heart to each other. You feel it from the soul, and like I said, if it's sincere, legit, it cuts through every delineation that anyone could imagine. So let me ask you. Where else we had? Okay, and that's his. Thank you, David Hurley. I think you're wonderful.
Yeah.
Thanks for those questions. He always has He always has the best insight when he listens to people, different artists. And so, now, let me get here, because, you know, you're quite a study. I did not know when I met you that you're also an artist. And when I say artist, I mean you're a painter, a sculptor, photographer.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
Okay, well, presently I'm retired from public school teaching, but I'm not anywhere close to being retired from doing this kind of stuff. I taught art, of course. Then I have my own pottery studio and class in Moss Point, Mississippi, which just, you know, it's 5 miles from here, you know, which is like my family's kind of from there too, and which I'm really happy about, and it's going well. And I still paint and sculpt. I actually founded a plein air festival. We had the first one this year, which was pretty successful, where, you know, people go paint outdoors like immediately and compete for prizes. And that was, you know, trying to contribute to the overall society in this area. And I'm trying to bring other artists from around the world to this area and see how beautiful and unique it is. And then as far as sculpture, I'm actually in the midst of trying to get a commission to do a very large bronze, I mean, life-size bronze Jesus for a medical school in Mississippi. And we've been talking back and forth. I've actually sent my proposal, and I've done my drawings and done cost estimates. It's a lot of work. It's like, you know, trying to build a house or something. You know, there's a lot of, because it's a really expensive process and a lot of work, and it will take about a year to do. But that, you know, I'm not sure yet on that, you know, because that's the way that big stuff goes. You got to, like, do a lot of work, and then maybe they'll back out. I don't know. I'm still waiting here.
No, I hope not. I really hope not. So now, first of all, let me see. Now, I put on the page on Blog Talk Radio, on my studio page, the links to your website, your Facebook page, and your Reverb Nation site. But for anyone listening, just so you know, it's the website is Don, D-O-N, Smith, S-M-I-T-H, productions.com.
Yeah.
It's probably spelled
production. I've been too good about just putting new stuff on there. I try to get more diligent. Like, I don't know what the heck to call. That's why the Don Smith Productions, which is, you know, I was, and plus a lot of stuff, this name Smith has already been taken. That was the best thing I could come up with in time. It covers a lot of area.
I think it covers the information there. Yeah, it's art, it's music, it's everything. And so, how long have you been an artist like this? I mean, when?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Did you start this before you play guitar, or?
For being an actual artist, that's legitimate artist. Yeah, that's kind of new compared to music. I played guitar and music since I was a little boy, but I discovered I could do visual arts much later, actually. I was an engineer at first, and then my grandmother passed away. She was an artist, and she left me all her, like, paints and stuff, and I just started fiddling around with it. I took a class with a bunch of little blue-haired ladies, and, like, my first paintings were really good. They said, oh, man, you're really good. You should keep doing this. So I just kept on taking more classes. And then I went to the junior community college and took all the classes I could there. And then I got a scholarship at William Carey Art College. And at that time it was on the coast. It was like Camelot. It was like a great art school. And it's not that way. It's kind of like falling apart. They had like this great mix of well-established, you know, great artists, and it built a foundry there, and like it had stone carving, it had like all kinds of cool stuff. But, you know, the Hurricane Katrina came and just destroyed everything, and they left, and, you know, it's all kind of fell apart. But that's another story. But that's how I got into the visual arts. You know,
so you didn't start that until like almost till what, college age? Or
yeah, after college. I'd already been
after
working.
College.
And yeah.
You think your grandmother saw, did she see an artist in you, or she just left it to you because she liked you best?
I don't know, not for sure. Maybe she saw it in me, or wanted me to see it in me.
Okay, because I wanted to know, because I know you started playing guitar when you were young, so I figured if you started with artwork, you know, my first picture was that maybe in Sunday school when all the rest of us were making Bibles out of soap and glitter and construction paper, you were probably doing a stained glass window of the Garden of Gethsemane or something. So
I would be too shy to do that. I didn't want to stand out, like, pretty much all the time when I was younger. Even if I could do it, I wouldn't have probably done it. I just want to be a peer in the back somewhere.
But, But don't you have to? Do you have to be careful? I mean, I think with your hands, with, you know, with pottery work, yeah, that's with yeah. You play guitar, but also working with things. I mean, pottery, you get your hands in there. Painting, I don't know a lot about it, but
yeah, I mean, my hands are very important. But and I, that's what why you know I played American football when I was in high school, which I was pretty decent at it. But I always get my hands bashed up, and like that's one of the reasons I didn't go on and play college. I had the opportunity. But I would say I didn't think my body would be able to hold up, and I wouldn't be able to do things that I really like to do. So I just like people didn't think it was a wise idea at the time that, that I didn't play college football. Everybody was like that, and it turns out that I'm involved in sports now with the other football, the big football, the world football, you know, that you play with your feet, and I'm heavily involved in that.
Yeah, let's talk about it. I was gonna. Say, before we do that, I was going to say, too, and especially if my friend David Harley or anyone else is listening, when I'm talking about his hands, if you look at the website, Don Smith Productions, the banner or up the masthead, I guess, where it would be photo to see you with your guitar, but that one hand, Dad, it just seems, just kind of exotic, powerful, because you're the artist and the musician and the teacher, and there's your hand out there. Anyway, don't mind me. Let's talk about the football. Talk to us about that.
I changed gears for a little bit, but I kind of approached football or soccer like as an artist, which I think it gives me an advantage because, you know, it is called the beautiful game, and let's call that for a reason. It is, if you look at it in that way, it is a beautiful game. It's like jazz. Like you're watching like physical jazz because the players are moving around. They're free to move anywhere they want to. They don't have to line up any certain kind of way. There's a certain lineup, but there's even less in the pros. That the players are playing with each other like other musicians, but they're also independently playing their instruments, their bodies. But that's, you know, I don't get too philosophical, but I could, you know, with that. But I do, I got into this by accident, sort of. Like, they needed an assistant coach at the high school, you know, and said they just grabbed me because I was there and I was a guy. So I just showed up, but then they didn't expect me to get into it so much, you know. They just wanted me just to be there, you know, be a teacher there.
All right,
but
did you expect you to get into it?
No, they didn't really support, like, you know, soccer where I was at the high school. It was just like, you know, we just want to pay a little bit of homage to it in case there was, you know, parents would complain or something. So we had to care of it. They didn't care if you won or whatever. You know, and I was totally all in. You know, I would practice extra hours. I would practice myself. I'd play with them. I took coaching courses, and I worked all the way up to get national coaching classifications, you know, with the federation and everything. And I was just like, you know, I was all in. You know, and I just kept on. You know, it wasn't easy because that wasn't, when I first started, like, there wasn't even enough guys to play. We had to use girls, other teams, to make up the team, and we get just trounced by people. And then, but eventually, you know, people started coming out and being interested, and we actually were, you know, beat people and stuff. And so it was kind of cool. It was a gradual process, going from like no interest to actually a decent team. You know, but that, I started my own club pretty much after that, and then it's an interesting story how that club and how the name came about. This could go, I don't know how much time we have, but, you know.
Yeah, we got about 10 minutes. Is it a 10-minute story?
Yeah, I'll give you a brief version of it. One of my players, Chris, he was fixing to go into his senior year, and he was taking care of this little black bird. It fell out of a tree or something. And something. Then he was going, leaving – and seen his girlfriend late at night, and he ran into a tree and had an accident, and he passed away. It was, like, horrible. And we were all so close to him.
Oh, my God. How old was he?
He was only, like, 17, fixing to be 18. You know, and he's fixing to be a senior, and everything's, you know, going his way. Got a girlfriend, and he's, like, really happy-go-lucky, like, long red hair. Like, you know, there's another story that he cut out. I'll get to that story in a minute. But he died in a car accident, you know, and it was just, we were close, and actually carried, was one of the pallbearers, and it was just like unbelievable, weird experience, you know. That, and it just, that's where the name of my club came from, Blackbirds. That's why I call it Blackbird United, because it was, you know, he was taking care of the little Blackbird. And a lot of times we do stuff, there'll be one Blackbird flying around in the sky in that area. It happened with his mother and other people too, so it was really significant in that way. But just to give you an idea, a little bit of clue of what kind of kid Chris was. He had this long red hair, like, you know, it was really important. Everybody thought that was his identifying thing, you know, the long floppy hair, and he's really happy-go-lucky. And one day he came to school and it was all cut off. And, like, everybody made fun of him, and he never said why he did it. You know, he just, you know, he just, like, laughed it off, and everybody was making fun of his hair being cut off. But it turned out later that he didn't tell anybody. He donated it to Locks of Love, you know, just on his own court. So that's the kind of kid he was. So it was good. It's a good, you know, to remember him that way. But we have a cool football team. It's I have a high school age group, and then I have a semi-pro group, which these guys are really good. They've all played college, and we've toyed with the idea of going pro. It's just a matter of finding sponsors, you know, because I'm pretty much paying for it out of my pocket now, which
yeah, that's, right. That's tough. Yeah, you need to go for the sponsors. Now, I'm going to have to go back a little bit to where you said that the first team didn't have enough guys. I believe you said to play with girls. Now, you had to have had some tough girls on there, though.
Oh, yeah. We had a couple of good girls.
If not when they started, they probably were.
They became that way. It was weird. Like, in other teams, like, we would kind of, like, make fun of it. With, you know, but, you know, we were gutsy enough to show up, and we were going to show up and play. We were going to concede, so we played with whoever we could get, and we just went through the process. We get whooped, but, you know, that's what I have to admire. The kids just keep on playing, play for the pure joy of playing the game, which is the way it should be, and that's actually the way the Federation wants us to raise our young players, is play for the sheer joy of the game, and not like, you know, you know how the dad coaches get out there and, like, win, you know, like, just scream at their kids, and just they'll try to rig the game by putting, like, one little player that can play in there. They'll just, like, cream. That's all you need when you're playing youth games. One good player. And the rest of the players just run around in circles. They don't know what the heck they're doing. That's not the way the other countries do that. And that's not the way you develop good players. You know, I'm all on board with that, just playing, you know, short-sighted games and giving everybody a chance to develop, because you have it's such a long process, and you know, kids burn out in America on certain sports because they're being pushed so hard by their parents and other people, you know, just to be great. You know, you just got to have fun with it. If you enjoy it, I mean, you'll keep on playing. You'll push yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the tricks to coaching, is just to find the places where people. And things that people love, and just like encourage it, put them in there, and turn them loose. Don't be like, you know, be more of an encourager than a tear downer.
That's a good one. We're going to remember that. Why don't you tell me? We've got about 5 minutes left. Why don't you tell me where people can see you play? Or what are the regular places that you play?
I play a lot at the Flying Irishman, which is like an Irish pub in Ocean Springs. Just played at the Hard Rock.
Saw that. How was that?
That was great. I played at the Hard Rock Cafe. It was a great experience. Fortunately, my contract didn't allow me to photograph it or videotape it. They own all those rights. But a bunch of people saw it. So it was good.
Yeah.
It was. And I'm playing tomorrow, which I'm working on right now. I've been working on all day. The city of Moss Point, Mississippi, is, you know, I like to mention them. They're having their 114th birthday party tomorrow. And only yesterday, they decided to commission me to try to write a song for Moss Point. So I've been frantically trying to write a song, like, all day. And I'm pretty close. I think I got a decent song. But I have to perform it at the ceremony, like, tomorrow afternoon. So that's what I'm doing, actually. Right in the middle of it.
Yeah, they just asked you yesterday. Yeah, okay. So I guess I better not let the show run long. You've got to get back to it.
Yeah.
Well, now, where else are you going to go? You know, I'm in Atlanta a lot and Asheville, too. Do you ever get to Atlanta?
I've been to Atlanta, but I haven't been lately. I want to travel and play some this summer. Maybe I can talk somebody into going with me. So, yeah, I don't want to drive all that way by myself, but just driving. I've done it before, like what I call a guerrilla tour, where you just show up places and play and ask them if you can play. You don't even have a plan. And it turns out pretty good. But, you know, I wind up playing some weird places like gas stations or welcome centers along with bars. You know, I'm not proud.
Hey, people everywhere need music.
If you just show up on the side of the road and start playing somewhere unusual, it really makes an impact on people. You're like, you know, it just changes their whole day. You know, so it's kind of fun in that respect.
Well, yeah, it does. It matters.
Yeah, I met Robert Johnson's son actually. Went to where you know, the blues guy, Robert Johnson, the Totally Sold to the Devil guy.
No, well, not personally, but yes, I know who he is.
Yeah, I went up to the Delta where he was from and, like, found out this little museum kind of place, and it was closed. And, like, I just sat out in front and was singing music. And a Lincoln Continental pulled up, and an old black guy pulled up with a big smile on his face and said, "What are you doing out here?" I said, "I just came to see where Robert Johnson was from, you know. I'm just a big fan and everything." He said, "Well, this is your lucky day." He got out of the car and said, and he introduced himself. "I'm Robert Johnson's son." He opened the place up and went in there. You know, he played on the piano that he played on, and like I signed the wall, and it was like, it was great.
Stop
it.
Really?
Yeah, he was the real deal. He drove a gravel truck all his life. He's not a musician, and he never made a dime until just the last couple of years. Like, they finally recognized that he was his son and his legitimate heir, so he started collecting the money from Robert Johnson, which is a lot of money. And then now he lives in a big old mansion, but he still has a gravel truck, and he drives it around. And of course, he has like a Lincoln and all kinds of toys and stuff, a bunch of antique rims. He accepted the Grammy and Lifetime Achievement on behalf of his dad and everything. He's probably the greatest blues guy ever.
You know, here's the thing I'm finding out about you. I'm already amazed at all the stuff that you do, but now you have so many valuable, fabulous, entertaining stories. I mean, like no one else I've ever met. So you've got to do another show with me sometimes. I think there's just too many things I need to.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Okay. All right. So we've got just a few seconds, and I want to be able to go out. I want to be able just to play a little bit of Ghost of Elvis again before we go, because that is such a hauntingly beautiful song, like David and I were saying, just kind of heartbreaking voice and steel pedal. So, Don Smith, so glad to talk with you again. Who knew when I met you a couple of years ago that were all these fantastic stories? And,
yeah, you never know.
No, yeah. You never know with people. Hope you'll come back sometime.
Yeah, I'd like to see you up there in Atlanta somewhere.
Yeah, too. I know all the places. I'll send you the information, okay? We'll make it happen. All right. Don Smith Productions is the website, and if you're looking on my page, you can also see a link to his Facebook website, Reverb Nation. You can buy Delta Wind and several more songs of Don's on iTunes, Spotify, and all the digital markets that are out there. Don Smith, thanks again. We'll see you next time. Next week, I've got Joe Symes and the Loving Kind from London who will be on the show. And this is Madam Perry signing off. Thank you so much for listening and being with us. And thank you, Don Smith. And here is the Ghost of Elvis.
Thought I saw the ghost of Elvis down at the tulip room, back on the coast Mississippi, back when the dream was still new.
Yeah, okay.
Parker kept an eye on it. We're talking about making dinner for Daddy. And of course, they can eat those.
They'll go round and round.
Mmm.